Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Cinema Gems. And as always, I'm your host, the Admirable Admiral. And as always, we are at a video store somewhere in your hometown. So come find us. Yes, video stores still exist. And you're probably wondering, wait, we? No, the dogs are not with me right now. They are hanging out with their grandparents because I am in the annex with the illustrious Butt Maestro.
I was restraining myself so hard to not actually and interrupt your intro, even though I can do that because we're in the annex together on the same microphone for the first time in how long?
A year, almost 2 years.
You could say it's been a while.
Yeah, but no. Person, I can touch you. It's not COVID, so I can touch you.
Yep. Ooh, we haven't done this since you walked in. We're back. Welcome back to Cinema Gems, everyone. We are another show on the internet where a bunch of opinionated nerds talk about the stuff we love, mostly movies. And today, well, you clicked on the title. You know what it is, unless you random click. I appreciate you. It's the search for Spock, y'all.
Star Trek 3. And also, by the way, we are both wearing Starfleet uniform from the original series.
Socks. Yes.
I have the science officer.
And I have
engineering. Engineering, security.
Engineering, security, red shirt. It's the socks I wear when I feel expendable at times. But that's okay. Yeah, we're back in person, and we're talking about a Star Trek thing. Like, the stars are aligning so perfectly, because y'all know anytime we talk about Star Wars or Star Trek, the show gets, like, 5 points extra nerdy.
Just 5 points. See, I would have put point, decimal point, five.
We get to really unleash our inner super nerds more than we usually do for non-sci-fi movies. So, get ready, buckle up.
Because it's more up our alley.
It is. Like, we're both pretty big Trekkies, and the Star Trek
you're bigger than me.
Depends. And we know, we're fortunate to know so many Trekkies, but because the Star Trek world, the first that Gene Roddenberry and all the writers after him have built on, is so huge, and the continuity is so tight, which is what I love about Star Trek, as opposed to why you're wearing the shirt you're wearing. Doctor Who, and its allergy to continuity.
It's fighting the original I Enterprise. Love
Doctor Who for. Please don't come at me, Whovians. I am a hooligan as well. I appreciate Doctor Who. I just find more comfort in the constant canon that is Star Trek.
I'm glad you talked all about that, because I'm ready to talk about the movie if you
want. I know you're ready to talk about Search for Spock. Let's talk
you
about
Search for Spock. Because every 2 years, we talk about a Star Trek movie.
I will say, before you listen to this episode, if you haven't seen Star Trek II Wrath of Khan, and you haven't listened to our episode talking about it, please do so. We'll wait.
And also, GLaDOS is on that episode.
GLaDOS is on that episode. And GLaDOS also watched this episode with me while they were painting my nails to get ready for D&D.
So I have the DVD.
We don't have GLaDOS here to talk about it with us.
No.
Because they're making the big bucks while we're sitting here in front of a microphone.
Okay, so this is the 2000 DVD release of Search for Spock. The reason I keep the 2000 ones, this iteration.
That DVD in particular, yeah.
No, that line of DVDs is because you can still see the film cut out of the spaceships flying.
Oh.
And I like that aesthetic.
Okay.
Because it makes me feel like I'm back in the 80s.
I don't think I got that watching it on... I forgot if it was Paramount or...
It's HBO. Paramount. It's Paramount. Because that's where all the Star Treks are. Yeah. Come on, it's Paramount, man.
It is Paramount.
It's Michael Eisner's old home.
Ew.
Yeah, he was head of Paramount before he was head of Disney. Yeah. And you know what? Leonard Nimoy had to convince him to direct this movie. Search for Spock, because Nimoy directed this one.
Yeah, okay, so how did all that play out? I was wondering, because there my very few nitpicks with this movie, and I think most people's nitpicks with this movie come down to there's a little bit of clunky dialogue, which, if you're a huge Trekkie, you're kind of used to some extent. But even for Star Trek writing, some of the writing in this is a bit clunky.
Correct, but it's because they didn't realize how big Wrath of Khan was going to be.
Oh, so they just kind of rushed together first draft script and ran with that?
Yes and no. So Harv Bennett.
Yes. I saw that movie on the title credits a whole lot. Yes.
So he wrote and produced this movie. So the day after Wrath of Khan was released, he got a call from Michael Eisner and was like,
We need a sequel.
go ahead and green light it. It's greenlit.
Okay.
So they didn't, they weren't sure if Spock was going to come back.
Yeah.
But apparently he walked in, Leonard Nimoy walked into one of the offices and was like, hey, I had a fun time last time. Let's do it again. And they look at him and go, but you're dead.
Yeah.
He's like, well, can I direct? And so he had to convince Michael Eisner, Leonard
That
Nimoy
he
had to,
would do it himself.
that he would direct. But because Michael Eisner, because he came out, because Leonard Nimoy came out with the book around that time, I'm Not Spock.
Right.
Because in the original movie, he wasn't sure if he was going to come back.
Right.
So Michael Eisner was under the impression that.
He was setting himself up to not be typecast as another Spock in other potential projects that weren't Star Trek.
But Leonard Nimoy had fun with it, but Michael Eisner was on that aspect, like, oh, he doesn't want to be typecast.
Yeah.
But so he had to convince Michael Eisner to let him come
Don't
back.
let me do this.
And he's like,
Okay.
okay. He's like, but I also want to act. He's like, I want to direct. And they're like, okay. So of course they brought him back. And I like that they brought Spock back in a different way.
So Leonard Nimoy was the first in what is a weirdly long line of Star Trek actors who then directed themselves in Star Trek projects later on. I'm talking about Shatner later. I'm talking about Riker and all the Star Trek that he has written and or directed and or starred in.
Did he do most of Picard?
I think so. At
Okay.
least season three,
Okay.
which is a for anyone that like started Picard and then kind of fell off it. I did too. I trudged through season one and two, and it's fine. Season three is where it gets real, real fun.
Okay, one of our friends asked me about that, so I'll give him that actual continuity of the show. Season one and two is all right. Okay, season three is better.
Season one and two are all right. They're like CB. They're not un-Star Trek-y, but they are Star Trek in the modern age.
It's still trying to
It
find its footing.
it's still trying to find its footing, and it doesn't really do so until kind of like the middle of season two. But season three is really where it picks up. And I'm done talking about Picard.
Okay. So
Because that's not even the right timeline for this movie. This is the original series.
search.
Those old
Those
what's
old what? Those old what?
what does TOS mean in the Lower Decks canon?
Those old scientists?
Thank you. Thank you. I don't know
Those
why
old
I blanked
scientists.
on that. I blanked on the acronym because the Admiral's here in real life again, y'all.
Yeah.
It's
But
still getting a little
unfortunately,
used to.
the dogs aren't here.
See, I usually have like a second and a half delay from when I hear the Admiral in my ear to when I have to come up with a response. I have to be quicker now, y'all.
It's okay. And of course, Harve Bennett was like, oh, I can go ahead and write all the script for you and do everything. So Nimoy and Harv came up with the ideas together
Okay.
for everything. So they were like, okay, Spock has to come back. The Genesis planet has to die. Kirk has to steal the Enterprise.
Yep.
But originally, did you know that Sulu was supposed to steal the Enterprise because Kirk was going to be under house arrest?
Okay.
But William Shatner was like, I'm not in this enough.
Oh, no. Okay.
And Harv and Leonard were like, hey, oh, Bill,
Yeah.
we need to talk.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to do this, that's fine, but you can't be in every scene. You know the scene where they go up to the high priestess
Yeah.
and they do the ceremony of the Katra?
Yeah.
Kirk was like, I should be up there.
Oof.
No! He wanted to be in the scene where Leonard Nimoy and Spock were talking.
What? Okay, no.
Exactly. Exactly. By the way, apparently Leonard Nimoy stated that that was the hardest scene to direct because he had to be unconscious and couldn't look at DeForest Kelly.
Yeah.
So
And this is in the 70s or
this is
80s.
in the 80s.
So they probably had some kind of monitors out set that they could do like a playback with after the take.
Right.
But still, I can imagine how in the moment that would be particularly difficult.
Exactly.
Yeah.
DeForest Kelly made the joke that Leonard Nimoy was trying to teach him how to direct with his eyelids the way he was
Okay.
moving. And I mean, do you want to kind of just get into the bare bones plot?
Get into the bare bones
All right.
plot. It literally picks up right after Star Trek: Wrath of Khan.
And on they're on the voyage home, not that one, the voyage back to Earth.
Right.
And they go to Space Dock 1. Is that Space Dock 1?
Which I was surprised to see what I thought was a next-gen design spaceport in a TOS movie.
This is when it originally premiered.
Okay, cool.
By the way, it was about three...
Because up to them, it was just like the open hangars in space that Enterprise launched from and to, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was about 3 feet tall as a model. It's all plexiglass.
Okay.
And they, you saw the little windows, right? They just scratched out where they wanted the light to shine through.
Yeah.
So they would shine the light through on the windows. And they used ILM, because it's cool. ILM.
Yeah.
So the Excelsior and Enterprise could be on the same...
Which was so cool.
Yeah.
Oh. So cool.
So basically, they come back. They get a hero's welcome, kind of in a way. In a way. Oh, did you notice the lady that stood up in the cafeteria? You know who that was, right?
Was it Reba McEntire?
No. Because
there was a redhead who stood up when
the Enterprise
was coming through. That I was like, is that freaking Reba McEntire in
go
a Star
on the,
Trek movie?
Go on the IMDb.
I'm going on the IMDb.
And look at Lady in Cafeteria. And go look at
it's
her.
It's gonna be under all cast, isn't it?
Go look at her her filmography, because I want you to realize who that is. But I'm gonna talk about the Excelsior for a minute, if that's important. The designer for the original Enterprise wanted to take a quote unquote mallet to that the model that they had.
Okay.
And he was given carte blanche to make the Excelsior happen. So he basically made it as what if the Japanese created the Enterprise? That's what the Excelsior is supposed to look like.
Okay.
Yeah.
Another weird thing about the Excelsior, I think, isn't that supposed to be the ship that Picard had his first
things on? I believe so.
So, like, even though I know they didn't include him in the scene, and they had no reason or way to include him in the scene, because he wasn't even thought of for Star Trek yet when this movie was made.
Yeah, I don't think his actual lineage would have been started. His parents would have still been on that wine field in France.
Oh, so
It's 75 years in the future.
Is it?
Next Generation is 75 years in the future from the original.
I know Next Generation is 75 years in the future, but never mind.
No, go ahead with your thought.
In my headcanon, Picard is somewhere on that ship when it gets stalled in space dock.
A little yeoman? A little bald yeoman?
Pooping his pants just a bit.
So, would you like to...
Grace Lee Whitney is the redhead in the...
The lady in cafeteria.
Who I thought was Reba McEntire. No, she is like a Star Trek regular.
Yeah,
she is already a canon character in Star Trek.
They had her come
Excelsior
back.
Excelsior Communications Officer, Janice Rand, Commander Rand, and then Woman in Cafeteria. And yeah.
You should go look at her from the original series. She's from TOS.
Yeah. I'm looking at her right here. She is already an established Star Trek character. So, okay.
Is that Yeoman, or is that the one that Khan falls in love with?
I don't know. That's a great question. Someone who knows the answer to that, please let us know. As always, at cinemagems@gmail.com.
I was going to look it up.
You can look it up.
So
go for it.
So then Spock's Katra, his essence, his soul is inside of McCoy's head.
Right, because he did the whole nerf pin.
Remember me.
Yeah.
Which I hope the Honorable Tesla of the Phantasm is free to do that to me. Remember me. Katra will be safe in my brain. You go ahead and talk about the plot. I want to show you something else, but you go on with
after
it.
So much of this movie is the fallout of Wrath of Khan. It is a direct consequence of Federation having been secretly running an experiment that is quick starting and terraforming a planet. That technology is new to the universe, even to Starfleet, even to Klingons and Romulans and all of them. And the Klingons are a bit scared of that. One Klingon in particular actually gets really, I'm not going to say the word, I'm going to say worked up.
He does get very worked up.
He gets very worked up at the idea of this thing that can destroy a planet and then create a new one in its place. Which, you know what? Fair.
By the way, this is before Back to the Future.
Really?
Okay. This is where Christopher Lloyd got his start, because for the longest time, he was on Taxi.
Okay.
He was a burnout hippie, a comedy, right?
Yeah.
He was more about the humor.
But this was his like dramatic audition.
Correct.
Okay.
And Michael Eisner was like, I don't want Christopher Lloyd. I don't want this to be a comedy. And Leonard Nimoy steps in and basically was like, look, I've been typecast before. This man can act. Let him at least audition.
He yelled Klingon pretty convincingly. Which I feel like is the test for Klingon actors. Like, how convincing and terrifying can you sound speaking a language that is, correct me if I'm wrong, loosely based on Yiddish?
I believe so, because you know why? This is where the Klingon language started.
Really?
Like, the person whoever created the Klingon language, this is where it originated from. So this is where you got into the nitty-gritty.
This is the first instance of Kaplach?
Yeah.
Wow, this is where it started.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. That's really nerdy, which some would consider the opposite of cool, but in our weird universe, the Cinema Gems universe, it's pretty cool.
And Edward James Olmos from
I know that name. Why do I know that name?
He was in the Battlestar Galactica.
Yes, he was.
Okay, he was originally supposed to play Krug.
Oh.
They wanted him to play Krug. But
I don't know. Christopher Lloyd is pretty great.
Christopher Lloyd killed it. You know what Christopher Lloyd has said? He said now that he's a little older and a more acting refined, he would like to go back and get another swing at some of the scenes that he did that he didn't feel
fully understand that.
He didn't feel like he stood up.
I feel like any performer at any point in their life, whatever their profession is, acting, playing an instrument, crafting, anyone as your skill builds over time is going to have that. And it makes me feel so much less crazy because I've had this about performances and even about Cinema Gems, which is why I hope Cinema Gems has evolved over time.
I believe it has.
Every performer has that thought of, wow, I wish I could go back and redo that knowing what I know now. Absolutely. And Christopher Lloyd has always been an awesome actor and has gotten better with age. I would kill to see Christopher Lloyd come back as a Klingon in new Star Trek. How awesome would that be? He doesn't have to be Krug, or he'd be Krug resurrected through some weird Borg stuff. I don't know.
She was Michelle. Was it Michelle? Grace Lee Whitney. She was the yeoman. She was Yeoman Rand in the first season.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's why they brought her back, because she left on bad terms, so they brought her back for the movies to kind of bring it back and have it.
And, get good terms again.
So that's cool. Want to talk about the big whale in the room? And no, I'm not talking about the voyage home. Do you want to talk about Robin Curtis?
Robin Curtis? What? Are we talking
Savick.
Are we talking about...
The recast?
Oh, sorry. Before we talk about the recast, I need to nitpick one small writing thing that kind of bugged me. Star Trek has had his own kind of quasi-militaristic, quasi-navy, quasi-space navy lingo for a while.
Mm-hmm.
That is while loosely based on established military canon, is also its own thing. Who the heck is Commander Starfleet? And why do people keep calling everything Commander Starfleet?
I don't know.
It's so confusing in this movie. This is the only Star Trek thing I've ever watched where they do that consistently throughout the movie.
So Gene Roddenberry hated that they went more militaristic.
Okay.
He hated that because it led away from his vision of the future.
The utopian future.
Yeah.
We can call it a utopian socialist future, which could be pretty awesome if done right. Just saying,
it's okay.
Unlimited resources for everyone sounds pretty awesome. I don't know why everyone's fighting it.
It's okay. That won't happen in our lifetime.
And I know.
And probably will never happen.
Yeah. There has to be a whole war before Zefram Cochrane can do first contact and all that.
So hey, it's okay. The Bell Riots are happening this year.
Oh, they are. Right.
That's a deep cut for somebody.
If by the time this episode comes out, if that happens... Or no, it won't be when this
episode it happened. No, but the Bell Riots happened, I think, I sent you a text. I think it's the beginning of September.
So in the beginning of September, Cinemaniacs, if you're listening to this episode, September and onward, please email us at cinemagems15@gmail.com to remind us if the Bell Riots happened or not. That'll tell us if we're in the right canon.
In San Francisco?
In San Francisco. We have to have at least one listener somewhere on the West Coast.
Yeah. We do. We have that one person that Googles us in Japan every week.
And I salute you.
So, basically, they have to steal the Enterprise. And Kirk, I like that Kirk respectfully goes and asks the Admiral, can I have the Enterprise?
This Admiral is a little bit goofy, and I like to think kind of sets the tone. Robert Hooks kind of sets the tone for very incompetent Admirals all throughout the Star Trek canon.
Yep.
This guy is so bad at his job.
And I love how he walks up to Sulu, and he walks up to Chekhov, and he's like, is the word given? The word is no. Therefore, I'm going.
We're going anyway. At which point, Gladys and I just went like, yep, that tracks.
That's a very Kirk thing to do.
It's an incredibly Kirk thing to do.
Did you like Sulu when he's like, don't call me Tiny?
Sulu absolutely kicking butt. I could have used more of that.
Yeah.
For sure.
So, you know who I felt like was missing from the bridge crew when they took the Enterprise away? Was, of course, it is Uhura.
Yeah. Because Uhura doesn't stay with them when they take the Enterprise.
So in the novelization, they expand upon that. Why? Because she is...
I'm so happy you read the Star Trek novels.
Because I'm a...
One's got...
Oh, man! I said the F word. Bonkers!
Because you're a freaking nerd. And I appreciate you being a freaking nerd.
Exactly. So, basically, Uhura stayed behind to disrupt communication.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't really know where the Enterprise was or was going, or to also mess up communication with whoever was in the area.
Right.
But I love, oh my God, I swear, I love the line where she's like, this is fantasy. And I'm just like, take me. I would be like, take me. Whatever.
Yes, ma'am, whatever you say.
You want me to go in the closet? I'll wait for you.
Can we also
actually think about it? The first three characters that talk in this movie are the only ones left alive from the original bridge crew.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
It's Sulu to Kirk, Kirk to Chekhov, back to Sulu, and then to Uhura.
Huh. Oh.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. Oh. Dang. Yeah. Shatter's still alive, though, right?
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
But R.I.P. to Nichelle Nichols.
Yeah.
Like, that was a great loss when she was... it was a huge loss when she passed.
We still have George Takei, I believe.
We still have George Takei, we still have Walter Cronin, and we still have William Shatner. I just talked about how they're the only three left of the original Bridge crew.
Yeah.
And also, R.I.P. to Nimoy.
Yeah, absolutely.
I
know I've told the story on the show before, but Leonard Nimoy passing away when he did was the reason I cried at my great-grandmother's funeral. Love you, great-grandma. Sorry.
Leonard Nimoy has a special place in your heart as well.
Absolutely.
And also your great-grandma.
Yeah.
And so basically, they get to Genesis, and they are seeing some type of distortion. And I'm glad that Kirk let Sulu kind of have this one.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, there's a weird distortion. And then Sulu was like, oh, wait, I see the exhaust or everything. And they started to fight, and they fire on the Klingon bird of prey, which originally, did you know that the Romulans were supposed to be the main baddies?
That would have been interesting, too. And you know what? Credit to Christopher Lloyd. I think he could have pulled that off, too.
But they went with... They went with Klingon because Nimoy talked to Harv Bennett and was like, hey, I feel like the Klingons are a little bit more like...
aggressive.
Exactly. More like more meat to chew and like more scenery to tear up.
At least at the time before we had time for those characters and a race to evolve and be more than that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that makes sense.
So
especially for where Klingons and Star Trek was at the time.
So it decloaks with the bird of prey, and they go to attack. And I love that Kirk being Kirk, give us a couple minutes, and then beam aboard on my signal. So they set the auto-destruct Enterprise, which... And
blow up the Enterprise.
Which, of course, is from the Battlefield episode. It's the same exact code that they... Except Chekhov is the acting science officer.
Right.
So he doesn't do Spock's work. But so while that's happening, Krug sends a a battalion of men. He sends in incredibly a lot of men, but I love that Sulu's like, oh, it's this amount of Klingons. Okay, cool. Well, we're going to go here.
Yep.
So when the Enterprise blows up, person who created it, of course, was so excited that he got to destroy it. Remember when the dish started to like blow up? But yes. Do you know how they got that?
No.
They dropped acetone on styrofoam.
Oh.
And that's how it happened.
Cool.
And also ILM threw in, I forgot what explosion from Star Wars, but they threw in an explosion from Star Wars behind.
Cool.
So when it exploded,
it was
big.
I thought it looked somewhat familiar. That was fun.
Yeah, it might have been the Death Star or something. Sorry.
It looked kind of fireworksy. It was big and bombastic. What I want to get to, though, meanwhile, this is happening up in space. Meanwhile, down on the planet Genesis.
Perfect segue.
I want you to get into why Robin Curtis is Savick in the movie instead of Chrissy Alley, who we saw in the first one.
So Chrissy Alley did the first movie, had a good time, was really good. I feel like her character was better in this one, mainly because she showed, I know she's half human.
But she really got to touch into her Vulcan side and use that knowledge to help little quickly evolving Spock.
Which, by the way,
evolving with the planet.
The which, screams?
Yeah.
Frank Welker.
Remind me who Frank Welker is. Why am I blanking?
Are you kidding me? Every animal name, every dog barking Frank Welker.
Scooby-Doo?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Cool.
Yes! Fred?
That is the first thing I thought of. I just wasn't 100% sure. I'm sorry, Admiral.
It's okay. It's fine.
We're back in person. It's weird. And
at least I'm not an incompetent. It's fine. At least I'm not an incompetent Admiral like most of Starfleet.
I am very grateful for that. Thank you.
So Chrissy Alley was like, okay, you want me to come back? She didn't even ask for that amount. Her agent asked for that amount.
Oh, no.
And
they were like, do you think Paramount's made money?
No, Paramount was like, DeForest Kelly gets lower than that.
Yeah.
So she dipped out and they got Robin Curtis to come in. A lot of people don't like the recast, but I'm glad that you're on the side that likes the
recast. I think she killed it.
She did an amazing job.
Especially since the recast is 0% her fault and she was probably just thrust into a role. It looks like she did her research into who the character was and not necessarily doing a Christy Alley impression. I'm glad she didn't.
Her and Nimoy talked about it and discussed it. Like, how about all that? So you remember how she helped him Ponfar, right?
She got the TLDR on Vulcan rituals from the guy who wrote the Vulcan ritual.
Correct.
Cool.
Correct. So you remember when they had Ponfar and, you know, she had to help him, right?
Yeah.
Remember when he comes down off of the altar?
Cool.
And she looks at him?
Yeah.
And she kind of looks away? Nimoy took her to the side and he's like, how would you greet an old lover in public? And she did that reaction. He goes, perfect! That's how I want you to do it.
Awesome.
And she does show up again.
She was great.
And Robin Curtis does show up for a blink and you miss it cameo in the voyage home.
Cool.
Because that's when they go back. She stays on Vulcan.
Yeah.
And
she killed it.
She did an amazing job.
I love her in this.
I'm sorry, Chrissy Alley. I like you, but I like Robin Curtis better.
I like. Here's the thing. It's like comparing Dumbledores, where like
I can see that
for the purposes of those movies, for the purposes of 1 and 2, Richard Harris is perfect. For the purposes of 3 and 4 and the evolution that character takes throughout the series before it was even a movie, Michael Gambon makes sense for that character going on. They filled their roles at various times in the canon perfectly, just like doctors in Doctor Who fill the vibe of that character to fit the times.
I agree with you, but also speaking of Michael Gambon's Dumbledore, he didn't yell at Harry in the book, man.
I know.
Why'd you put your name in the Goblet of Fire?
Calmly. Exactly. is how you trigger a room full of Harry Potter fans. Just say the word calmly.
Sorry, I just wanted to make sure.
That's been established for a while. I don't know if we've gotten to talk about that.
That's why I wanted to talk about it, was because we're here. We can do it.
We can do it. There's no reason not to.
And do you want to talk about David?
Yeah, so David from the first movie, Kirk's son.
No, the second movie.
Sorry.
I understand what you mean. It's a trilogy.
I know.
This is the second part of the Genesis trilogy.
Okay.
Which also, Undiscovered Country is kind of lopped in there because this is where Kirk gets his hatred for Klingon.
Is this movie also the reason he gets eventually demoted? Because he does eventually get demoted.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, eventually, and then he gets it again.
Okay, because Starfleet's weird.
So we get to
his son is back. I'm disappointed Carol Marcus isn't back. Do you have a reason why?
After you discuss the scene that we're about to discuss, I'll talk about why Marcus wasn't in it and her reaction to why she was glad she wasn't in it.
Okay.
Because someone had to die.
Yeah.
Someone had to die. And you can't kill Spock. He just, we literally in the movie.
Yeah.
You can't kill Spock. And
I think there is an alternate darker timeline where Spock gets killed.
Possibly.
And Kirk just goes full unhinged.
But I mean, I think Kirk,
Kirk handled the death of his son right in front of him pretty dang well.
So remember when he fell back?
Yeah.
To catch himself? He lost his best friend. He literally lost his command. He doesn't have a job. He stole a ship.
He is rock bottom.
He lost his son. When he fell backwards, that was the take that they used. Because would a real admiral, when he falls backwards after dealing with all that, be able to sit in his chair?
Yeah.
Exactly. So the way it was handled, to me, that is whenever William Shatner is directed by a competent director,
yeah.
Ergo Nimoy, ergo Nicholas Meyer.
Yeah.
He actually does a really good job with this character.
Yeah.
Agreed. Not his vanity project.
Right.
Of, oh, we're gonna go meet God.
This was good, Kirk.
Exactly.
This was Kirk as a human, as a believable human.
Exactly. I thoroughly enjoy it. I'm glad that you like it. I love it. But yeah, unfortunately, David does pass. He does an admirable thing, which, by the way, apparently he did the same thing Kirk did and changed the rules with proto matter. Just like, because remember, Savick was like, just like your father, you've changed the rules.
Oh, okay.
Is that weird lineage like...
And there was a mention of Kobayashi Maru earlier in the movie. So that does kind of make sense. That does kind of track. Okay. Yeah. I see the parallels. Yeah. Nimoy and other writers. That's cool.
Yeah. So that,
this is the kind of thing I love about Star Trek. When canon pays off. When decisions made beforehand have repercussions later on.
Exactly. And so as this is going on, all I got to say is I would have been upset if Savick would have passed. But I'm not saying David was the most expendable, but I feel like it gave Kirk the push off of the cliff to have him be like, I'm done.
Yeah.
Because.
Yeah. I was going to be kind about this, but you've lost that privilege kind of vibe.
And not just because really you killed my son.
Yeah.
But it also is because you killed my son. But he did an admirable thing.
Yeah.
He literally stopped Savick from being stabbed.
Yeah.
And I love that Kirk was like, who is it? And Savick's like, David is dead. I like that he didn't specify the relationship between it, because the Klingons would have used that to the advantage.
Exploit.
Exactly.
100%.
Exactly. Because
one thing that Christopher Lloyd does really well in this movie is portray a very tactful and smart Klingon. Rash and violent as heck, but like very smart and very tactful. Like he is playing 3D chess.
And he's a dog lover.
Yeah. So like, you know, can't be that terrible.
Do you want to know the name of that dog on set?
Please.
Fluffy.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cute.
It was operated by a puppet. They wanted its ears to move, but they didn't want people to love it too much when it died. So they were like, let's not make the ears move.
For an absolute monstrosity, for a terrifying, grotesque monstrosity, that's really cute.
So as they're going on, Kirk beams down, finds Krug, and he's like, "Hey, beam my friends up."
Yep.
And we can talk about it.
Yep.
And he's like, "Fine, I'll do it." He's like, "Also, the Vulcan, no, because you want it." I'm like,
he's pouring on the emotional manipulation.
I'm like, Klingons, man.
Yeah.
Klingons, bro.
Yeah.
So, they get in a big fight, which obviously some shots are not Shatner.
Right. And I imagine some of those shots aren't Christopher Lloyd
either. I mean, he was kind of... He was kind of young, but the wide shots, I don't think it was.
Probably not.
Close-up shot.
It's a very Star Trek-y fight.
How would you have felt about, so the line that Kirk says when he kicks off Krug into the lava pit is, I've had enough of you, correct?
And the emphasis is, it seems to be on the wrong syllable, just a little bit.
Correct, but that's Shatner.
That's Shatner, and I can't think of a better way that I would have directed Shatner. Like, you could sit there for hours and have Shatner do every possible permutation of that, and because it's Shatner, it's gonna come out weird.
Exactly. which, by the way, back to the Enterprise destruction, my favorite line that Bones has ever iterated, when Kirk goes, what have I done, Bones? My God, what have I done? You turn death into a fighting chance.
Yep. Well, you always do.
Exactly.
That is what Kirk always does. And that is what a lot of our favorite Star Trek captains always do.
And I just love that it's from McCoy. Yeah. I don't know if that was Spock's brain speaking.
That is one of the more fun elements of this movie. DeForest Kelly really, really... And I was a little confused at first until they established it a little better, and I was glad they did. But DeForest Kelly does a phenomenal job of playing Bones. He's still Bones. He's still himself. But every once in a while, he's got Spock's thoughts kind of like coming to the front of his brain. And he's starting to coexist with him really, really well.
Yeah. And he has... I think there's even a moment where Leonard Nimoy's voice comes out of him off screen.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody looks to the side like, what the hell?
Yep.
How'd you like Spock's dad came back from the original series?
That was really cool. That was really cool. I liked him in this movie.
So
I
think they kind of aged him up. He's always been
a very intimidating Vulcan.
This is Sarek, right?
Yeah.
So they aged him up not as much as they did in the original movie because he looked about the same age. They just kind of powdered his hair white.
Sarek has always been a very good explanation for why Spock is the way he is. And he really was in this movie as well. I think it was phenomenal.
Yeah. Walter Kogan did an amazing job. Sulu did an amazing job.
Well, Walter Koenig?
Koenig.
Chekhov?
Yes.
Yeah, sorry. I got you.
But we are almost done. The line that was originally supposed to be the line that they were like, oh, let's say this instead of I've had enough of you. Would you have preferred that line or would you have preferred this is for David?
This is for David, but like not necessarily shouting, just kind of like Kirk, very internalized and coming to peace with like, I'm burying my son with you.
So kind of like Goldeneye for England, James? No, for me. Just like that?
Yeah.
Okay. I could see that.
I think that would have been a very less is more kind of moment.
Yeah, but then it's also very Shakespearean and Machiavellian and type of thing. What?
Which that's
what
I know Star Trek Shatner is? And Nimoy, and I know that's what they're about. Like, come on, y'all. That could have been really cool.
Because Shatner is a Shakespearean actor.
100%.
Yeah. And then they fly off. They go back.
I say that, but I'm also trying to imagine Shatner reciting Shakespeare, and I can't not laugh.
Wait. We
have to look that up after the show.
What happens if he did Macbeth? So as they leave, as they get beamed back up, which Kirk does do Klingon very well.
Yes. Yes, he does.
And beams back up. I love that the last Klingon combatant is like, you said you would kill me. I lied.
I love it.
And then I love how they're trying to configure everything. And Scotty's like, that or nothing. And I don't know if it was Shatner just at the end of the day going, let's go. Like,
it does seem like you get off the clock at noon and it is 11:59.
Just go. While that's going on, they basically go back to Vulcan and they wanted to film in Utah, but this was all sound stages.
Okay.
On the Paramount lot. And remember the Genesis planet? How it was all fiery, right? Yeah. There's a fire that caught on set and almost destroyed this set piece.
Okay.
And Shatner was caught on film for the news getting a water hose combating the
fire.
Yeah.
The set fire.
Yeah.
Wow.
In uniform.
Amazing. I want to see pictures of that after we cut.
And they, oh, and by the way, the lady that is the High Priestess Vulcan, I believe she is a dame. I believe she is a dame.
As a knighted.
Correct. Correct. Correct, correct, correct.
Up in the leagues with Dame Judy Jen. Dame Judy Dench.
And she is Dame Judith Anderson.
Oh.
Yeah, she's been in a lot of things. She's known for Rebecca. She's known for Laura. She's known for Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. She's also known for Search for Spock.
But she was the weird kind of intimidating Vulcan priestess who somehow brought Spock back to life. She used Vulcan stuff.
Magic?
To get the consciousness out of McCoy and Dev Hat and get it into Spock's now suddenly matured body.
Yep.
And Spock sure takes his sweet time remembering his friends.
I mean,
he did like
he literally died. But it's like, been 24 hours.
He also got his full consciousness back from like if Vulcans can do that, Vulcans are gonna like. I don't know. That seemed really drawn out for me. At that point, I was ready for the movie to end.
So when the scene where he's like the ship out of danger, and then they reconnected, yes. It was like I felt like it was like. Going back and setting
restarting
it back.
Restarting the tape.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Giving a hard reset to the computer.
Yeah.
So when everybody's around him and, you know, reacting to him.
He caught the edge of the flaming windmill on the correct rotation.
He did. So in that scene, when everybody's going to around him, did you realize where Shatner was?
No.
He's off to the side watching his crew just get together.
Okay, yeah.
And you know, getting that camaraderie back. And it's just nice to see Kirk grow a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the story continues. Or is it the voyage continues? The voyage continues.
Yep.
And in 2 years, we'll do the voyage home.
Okay.
So, yeah. Oh, and I do have...
There was something you wanted to read to me that apparently has to do with the other movie that we're reviewing together while you're in town.
Yes.
I've not been allowed to know what this is yet.
So Christopher Lloyd appears in this film with Miguel Fierre, which just before a year, he worked with Jose Fierre, the father of this character, on To Be or Not to Be, the Mel Brooks movie.
Okay.
10 years later, he worked with Fierre's mother, on Radioland Murders,
what?
Which we are going to review
what?
Right after we record.
What? This looks absurd.
George Lucas came up with the story.
It's a George Lucas
story? No, it's a story, George Lucas. That's the only affiliation that George Lucas has to this is the story of Radioland Murders, which probably will come out a week after The Search for Spock.
By Joel McKinley. Okay.
But do you want to talk about James Horner before we go?
Again, incredible music in this film. Let's be honest. Like you said, this is part two of the trilogy.
The Genesis trilogy. So, or better known as Genesis?
So James Horner does carry on composition for the next one as well.
Correct.
So, okay, yeah. He carries his themes from Wrath of Khan into this one.
He loves this theme more because it's more friendly. And not as bombastic as Wrath of Khan. This is more like ethereal, more type of small, like it's an episode of a TV show. It's more as his, like, not his passion project, but he said he loves this score more than Wrath of Khan.
He does a very fun theme in Variations, where he takes that theme that he established very bombastically in the first one, but like you said, a little more calmer with it. Yeah. There are some very nice, I mean, I'm biased because I'm a horn player, but even GLaDOS pointed it out. There are some very fun and very, very sweetly played little horn solos. You get that motif there very lightly in the background. It's a very poignant moments. So yeah, it was good. It worked.
Yeah.
I liked it a lot. James Horner continues to be an incredible composer throughout these movies. R.I.P. James Horner. I think.
And also,
let me double check that before.
Yeah, I don't want you to get attacked. I think he's still alive.
He passed away in 2015, unfortunately.
Oh, R.I.P. James Horner.
That's what I thought.
But also R.I.P. to the Enterprise.
Yeah. The Enterprise full on blows up in this movie.
Yep.
It does a thing that a lot of franchises are very afraid of doing, literally burning the house that
it was built for.
Yeah.
Yep. So, yeah, that has been our review for Search for Spock. Thank you, Marty and the Arrogant Observer, for allowing us to be on your website. Also, Kevin George, thank you for letting us use your music. But Maestro, do you want to talk about the Cinemaniacs?
Before we do, I do want to say, because I don't think we gave our rating, so here on Cinema Gems,
we did not!
We have a very simple rating system. Whole gem, amazing movie, half gem, it's all right. No gem, don't waste your time. Admiral, this is a whole gem, right?
So, I feel that out of all of the Star Trek movies, the original six with the original bridge crew, this is the most underrated.
I would put this right under or right next to Wrath of Khan.
So for me, it's Wrath of Khan, and it's a hair below it at a full gem. They're both full gem movies.
I agree.
But
my only nitpicks with this movie are things that I'm used to seeing in Star Trek.
Exactly.
And kind of expect it with some Star Trek.
Exactly.
Like, I'm not going to sit here and complain about clunky white writing and pretend that most of Voyager isn't also clunky writing, but I love that show anyway.
The Neelix cheese. I mean, come on.
Tuvix.
Tuvix cheese? Is it Neelix cheese or Tuvix?
It is Neelix cheese, but you made me think of Tuvix because you were also talking about Lower Decks. Anyway, look, we're done talking about Star Trek. Thank you, as always, to our amazing Cinemaniacs. What did you think of this episode? You can let us know all about what you thought about what we said about this movie, as
Search
well as
Spock.
Your opinion separately from that on this movie and the rest of the kind of the Star Trek movie.
How
much of a Trekkie are you? There is no wrong answer. There's no wrong answer to that. Please know that we are not gatekeepers of any fandom. We love them all. We're not going to sit here and bash you for loving a fandom that we love slightly differently from us.
Come on in.
If you're
in.
A Voyager stan, be a Voyager stan. If you're an Archer stan, be an Archer
oh,
stan.
Oh, Archer!
It's okay. It's okay. Archer's valid, too. It's okay. I'm fine. We're good.
But Sisko's the best.
Sisko's the best.
Because he's a homeboy! He's a local boy.
So glad we're back.
He's a local boy.
Please let us know at cinemagems15@gmail.com how wrong we are, as always. Thank you for bearing with us for 47 minutes. I'm not sorry, because that's what happens when the hosts get back in the same room together.
And also, guys, we just want to go ahead and let you know that you should take some time for yourself before you can help others. It's nice to go into whatever your comfort place is so you can get your Kaktra in line.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And also, please help yourself before you can help others. As a
help
great man,
so you can help others.
As a great man once said, you can't pour from an empty cup.
100%. As always, we still just want peace and accountability for the Middle East as well as everywhere. We're sitting here talking about Star Trek. We're not going to talk about how humanity could do better if we all tried to have each other's backs.
I mean, there's also a really big genocide war going on in the middle of Africa as well.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Nobody wants to talk about that one, though. But, you know, I'm sorry. I just wanted to make sure I brought that up since we were talking about Starfleet and the future. And my stomach is growling because it's very hungry.
Mine is too. So we're going to go ahead and wrap up this episode. Thank y'all for sticking with us for so long. We love y'all.
Bye, guys. We just want to say, remember to wipe your hooves and see you later. But remember, Black lives always matter, guys.
Love y'all.
Bye. Live long and prosper.
Live long and prosper. High five. Yeah.